Good afternoon, Amanda McCreed with you, and I'm joined by herbalist Dennis Stewart for our first Health Naturally for the year with you.
And it's a great pleasure to have you.
It's always an honour.
It's good to be with you, Amanda.
Now, Dennis, last week you spoke briefly about the herb known as echinacea.
Yes.
You didn't have a chance to discuss its use in modern herbal medicine, so we'll do that this afternoon.
Look, that will be great. We'll just review one or two important points about this most important herb, and then we'll look at some of the areas where it is used medically.
And we're talking about echinacea.
We are indeed. Echinacea.
Could you just briefly repeat something about the history and benefits of the herb?
First of all, as I said last week, echinacea goes under various names. It is popularly known as purple coneflower, and as such it can be purchased from good nurseries. It grows very easily. Beautiful plant to have in the garden. Bees love it. But there are three species: Echinacea purpurea, which is the most popular one; Echinacea angustifolia, which is the most sought after one; and Echinacea pallida. All of them share common characteristics. And as I said last week, I had a fair bit to do with introducing the use of Echinacea seriously into the health food industry and herbal medicine in Australia many years ago. And I did that particularly in conjunction with Professor Cliff Elliott, who was the Emeritus Professor of Physics at this university. And we actually grew Echinacea purpurea in his on his lovely little farm in Peach Orchard Road, Arimba. And that herb became popularly known, and it became in Australia, as in most English-speaking countries, a leading herb, representative, in fact, of herbal medicine in the Anglo-American community of herbalists. Without echinacea, it would be difficult, and I emphasise this, it would be difficult to achieve many of the benefits that we do achieve, particularly in those conditions that are particularly suitable to be treated with echinacea. And for the cynics, let me just say, the literature available on this herb is quite vast, ranging from the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia, which I mentioned frequently on this program, where the monograph on echinacea is superb, through to other textbooks that vouch for the efficacy of the herb, particularly as an agent to promote resistance to recurring infection and to help treat some stubborn conditions that do not even do well with a mainstream medical approach that may or may not involve antibiotics. There are so many applications for this remarkable remedy that we could virtually spend the whole program talking about its benefits. I'll talk about a few of them in a moment, but initially just see it as a herb that helps resist infection, promotes resistance, and is used particularly for recurring infections in various organs of the body. We'll talk about some of those conditions in a moment.
Okay, and you were just saying about echinacea potpourri.
Potpourri.
Can you use that in your underwear drawer to make it smell nice?
No, the bees actually love it, but I wouldn't suggest that you pick it nonchalantly and put it in your underwear, because you never know, you might also carry with it a bee. But look, I must give it a plug. It is such a beautiful plant, and it is so hospitable to our beautiful bees that it does warrant our taking seriously the putting of it into our gardens, watching this blessed herb grow, and see the number of bees and honey eaters that will target it.
Yep. Great. Well, we've got Keith on the line from North Lambton. Keith, you've got an inflamed prostate.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much. Good day, Dennis.
Hello, Keith.
I've been looking and doing some research.
Yes.
I get an inflamed prostate.
Yes.
And it affects nocturia.
Yes.
And I've got some remedies. I'm already on saw palmetto.
Yes.
And stinging nettle root.
Yes, okay. Both those herbs are useful for benign prostate conditions. But where you have an inflammatory state, within the prostate, you need to look at a couple of other natural remedies that will lessen the assertion of it. You should, as the Europeans would tell you to do, you should take the herb echinacea in conjunction with saw palmetto. Very rarely in Europe is saw palmetto prescribed on its own. Its running mate frequently is the herb echinacea, which encourages resistance to recurring infection, works well with saw palmetto, but specifically addresses the recurrent activity of infection within the system. So with what I would be doing if I were you, I would certainly start to get onto the herb echinacea, which you can get from your good pharmacy, from our herbal rooms in your lamp or health food store. That is a starting base. But what you should also do, don't overlook the simple remedy of using, for instance, cranberry juice. Cranberry juice is used to treat urinary tract infections, but can also reflect its benefit in recurring prostate infections.
I do have cranberry tablets.
Yes.
I take that.
Yes. Let me just say...
Some exploration.
Yes, yes.
And I was recommended a couple of things.
Yes.
One was pumpkin seed oil, and you can get that in a capsule.
Yeah.
And the other one is Pygeum, P-Y-G-E-U-M.
Yeah.
What are your
plum.
Thoughts on those?
Okay. Look, both those herbs are well known. The last one, Pygeum, is known as African plum. It's a primary remedy used particularly in Europe, particularly in France. But both those remedies have more to do, Keith, with the enlargement symptoms and, as far as I'm aware, not brilliant in addressing recurrent infection. You have to look at herbs that are more antimicrobial and assert themselves on the urinary system and involving the prostate. Cranberry is good if taken in the correct dose.
Yeah.
You should most definitely be on echinacea.
Echinacea.
And the herb that is mentioned in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia, not used as popularly today, unfortunately, as it should be, and that is the South African herb buku, B-U-C-H-U. Buku is a beautiful aromatic remedy that smells and tastes a little bit like peppermint but has an antiseptising effect on all the way through the urinary system. So it can be used for prostatitis, cystitis, urethritis. My view is if you were to append those to your enlargement treatment, you'd get a better result.
Right. I also take curcumin. Is that...
Yeah, look, curcumin... I hate to say this, but I think curcumin is becoming a little bit overrated.
Right.
Now, what I mean by that is that our industry is no different to any other industry these days. It gets on a roll. and when I frequently say, and this is not appreciated by some people, but I frequently say our industry has lost its innocence. By that I mean when I started, there was... How can I call it? A dependence upon less well-known herbs, more of the American and the Anglican spectrum. Curcumin has more to do with the use of the herb in Ayurvedic medicine and North Asian medicine. I recommend curcumin a lot, but I would be reluctant to see it having much antimicrobial effect on the urinary system. It might just irritate it.
How do you spell echinacea?
E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A, echinacea. When I started practice, I would probably go through more echinacea than any other herb. It was so much the backbone, literally the backbone of Anglo-American herbalism. What's happened, unfortunately, Keith, is that in modern times... a lot of herbs that have never been part of the Western system have crept their way into the country. A lot of them are cheaper herbs. Sometimes they come with very verbose claims, big market associated with them. If you use echinacea, you'll not be disappointed.
Good, eh? Well, thanks very much, Dennis.
It's a pleasure, Kate. It's a pleasure.
And we've got Julie on the line. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Can you tell Dennis what the problem is?
Hi, Dennis. My little girl required pseudomonas from the hospital.
Yes.
I just wondered, would echinacea help that?
Okay. My first question, Julie, would be, how old is your little girl?
She's 12.
Okay. Look, a 12-year-old child, in my opinion, and I don't know much about your little girl, but
yep.
I have prescribed echinacea frequently to young,
okay.
To children at 12 years of age. The reason I ask that question is that if a child is particularly young, that child, in my opinion, needs to be, how can I call it, monitored or managed by a paediatrician or at least a GP. That is the ethical and right thing. But as a child moves up and can speak and think for themselves and is robust, I have no problem in recommending the use of echinacea as a means of building up resistance to infection and lessening some of the lingering symptoms of various infections. So I think that would be a very useful thing to do. I would suggest also that it might be worthwhile to reinforce that with, say, some vitamin C. I'm a great fan of vitamin C. Despite the controversy, I'm convinced of the claims that it does assist infection fighting. So I would suggest you, you're at Cameron Park, go to your pharmacy. The pharmacy stocks good echinacea preparations. Talk to your pharmacist or the pharmacy assistant. Tell them you've spoken to me. Echinacea comes in various forms. I think it would be best, seeing your little girl's only 12, that you probably think about a liquid preparation.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I was just going to tell you she doesn't eat. She has like a pig, a feeding pig.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I tend to think that using a liquid preparation might be the way to go.
Yes.
But talk to the pharmacist.
Okay.
I come back to the point that it is safe, it can be taken or supplied without prescription.
Okay.
You'll always find the occasional individual that might react, but I've never seen any reactions to that herb in my many years of prescribing it. And when I started practice, I started in Gosford, and going back those many, many years, the number of children I saw in those days was incredible. I think everyone was having babies, and a lot of them would have been treated with echinacea.
Okay, all right. Well, yeah, I was just like wondering, like, is it just like with the antibiotics that she's been on, it doesn't seem to be helping that much? And then, I'll give anything.
Well, echinacea, one of the indications for it is to promote resistance and to help people fight recurring infections or infections that linger even after appropriate medical treatment has been given. Talk to the pharmacist about it, and I think you'll get a good result.
And we have Jenny from Tookley on the line. Hi, Jenny. Hi. You've got issues with macular degeneration.
Yes.
Hello, Jenny.
Yes, Dennis.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good. Are you using anything presently from complementary medicine?
I'm having injections every 7 weeks in my eyes down in Westmead.
Yes.
And I've been taking macular...
Macuvision?
Yes.
Look, that is a well-known and very good supportive medication. I dare say your ophthalmologist knows of it and approves your taking it?
Yes, he recommended it.
Well, there you go. And look, I would say it is one of the best products on the marketplace as complementary therapy for that condition, particularly when you have an ophthalmologist who is carrying out the primary therapy and monitoring your condition and happy for you to be taking it. However, my reading on macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy, My reading suggests that, interestingly, the herb ginkgo biloba.
Can you spell that for me?
G-I-N-K-G-O.
Ginkgo
biloba. That is very, very highly recommended in the writings of Pisano and Murray, two leading American medical naturopaths. That is highly recommended, as is the herb bilberry.
Now, you said that before for something, didn't you?
Bilberry. Bilberry. Yeah, bilberry. Bilberry contains a fraction of what are called anthocyanidins, which are a group of bioflavonoids, very safe indeed, and are called up by Pisano and Murray as useful, a useful remedy to support ginkgo biloba. Now, let me just say, with reference to the ginkgo, ginkgo is a very active herb, very, very useful. But in my opinion, there are some conditions where it may not be appropriate. If, for instance, you are on a blood thinning medication, it might be worthwhile pausing and discussing whether or not it's wise to take it. There was some thought, not as much these days, but there was some thought which still occurs in literature, suggesting the ginkgo might interfere with the clotting. And if a patient is on anti-clotting medication, the various forms of it, you'd need to be cautious that you weren't prescribing something that could interact with it. So I guess what I'm saying, if you are on what's called a blood thinner, it might be wise to pause with the ginkgo, but certainly the bilberry is okay, and discuss bilberry with your doctor, because there is probably emerging literature which tempers my conservative approach to it.
Right. Oh, Dennis, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Jenny.
That's very interesting. That's wonderful. Thank you very much. So I can get this bilberry
and even the ginkgo at your pharmacy. I'm not sure whether you have a health food store down your way, but you would certainly have a pharmacy, and most pharmacies these days, particularly village pharmacies, tend to stock a good range of complementary medicine, and many of them have, how can I call them, people servicing the vitamin and mineral component of their businesses very competently.
Good luck with that, Jenny. All the best. Next on the line we have Matthew from Garden Suburb. Hi, Matthew.
Hi.
Hello, Matthew.
Dennis, I damaged a nerve in my finger.
Yes.
And it is now numb.
Yes.
The surgeon said, look, it's not really worth operating on, but he spoke highly of lion's mane mushroom.
Mm. Yeah, look, it's, without wanting to sound cynical, and I'm not cynical, Matthew, when I say this, but there seems to be a bit of a push on lion's mane. It's being put forward as having some benefits on what is called up in the technical literature as neurodegenerative conditions. It suggests that it might have some benefit, and I say might have some benefit, in addressing certain levels of Parkinson's disease or even certain levels of dementia. Your surgeon or whoever recommended this may be on the money, and it certainly won't hurt you to give it a try. I have not heard too much of its benefit in addressing traumatic nervous system conditions, but if he's recommended it, you trust his word. It's popularly available, but one of the things that needs to be again taken on board is that in the literature, and you can Google it, in the literature you will find that it does have some potential complicating effect in people that are on blood-thinning medication. And if you're on a blood thinner, it might still be okay, but you would need to be given the nod by your medical manager, because as late as yesterday, with a patient. We were looking at this herb, and there was some enthusiasm on his part to use it, and we did a complete assessment of its potential benefits, which looked good, but again, there was a caution about prescribing it where the patient was on blood-thinning medication.
Right, OK, good. OK, that's useful information.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. OK, you're busy today, Dennis. Next on
the
line.
Good questions, good questions.
We've got Kay all the way from Canberra. Yeah, yeah. Hi, Kay.
Hello. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Kay. How are you?
I'm well.
Can you hear us down there, can you?
I can.
Oh, well, I wonder if they hear us in Parliament House. They might hear, they might hear something sensible.
I might introduce them to you. It's one of the best things that a girlfriend from Singleton did for me was to tell me about this radio station. So I stream it all of the time.
It's the best in Australia.
Look, I just wanted to ask you, echinacea's new to me. I have been taking a similar thing for my immune system.
Yes.
But it does interest me. And I wondered, I know you say we can ask the pharmacist, but Dennis, I wondered whether you could guide me whether you think liquid's better or tablet.
Okay. Most of my use of echinacea is liquid. And if you were to look at the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia, the liquid preparation for what's called the 1-to-1 fluid extract is 0.25 to 1 mil.
Right.
So that's the dosage range. If you're using it for general well-being, and many people do that, particularly in wintertime, where it's an excellent supplement in wintertime to help fight colds and flus. That's one of the incredibly useful but now underappreciated roles for this famous American herb. If I was you, I would use the liquid form and take it, I'd say half a mil. That's a low dose. But if you are using, let me emphasise this, if you are using what's called the 1-to-1 liquid extract, that dosage prevails for that, 0.25 for 1 mil. If you were using a 1-in-2 extract, the dose would be double that. So if you are purchasing it from your health food store or pharmacy, it's important that you note the strength of the extract you're getting, because some extracts in the marketplace are not, how can I call them, not 1-to-1 fluid extracts. They might be 1-in-2, and that's okay, so long as you double the dose. So the dose for a 1-in-2 would be something like 0.5 to 2 mils.
Right.
Because it's it would be prescribed in double the dose that the 1-to-1 would be prescribed in. So you'd probably get the 1-to-1. I only work with 1-to-1 fluid extracts because I dispense it in my dispensary. But I'm sure that you would be able to get a 1-to-1 fluid extract, that would be shown on the bottle. If not, the dosage on the bottle needs to be abided by, because that dosage would be based on some concentration of the extract.
Yes, okay. Good, thank you, Dennis.
It'll get you through. It'll get you through the winters of Canberra, and also save you from getting nausea listening to some of what goes on in the big house. I'm only joking.
Well, we need double dose for that.
Thank you so much, Kay.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Kay.
All right, last call at the moment. We've got Greg from Rutherford on the line. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Hi.
Hello, Greg.
Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Oh, well, indeed. You must be able to tell that, even though I've been a sucking on a fisherman's friend, which my dear colleague here provided for me. She's a singer. She's a star singer.
But thanks.
They're not bad, I swear by them. They're the great, great introduction to throat conditions.
Absolutely.
How can I help you, Greg?
I grow, I cook, and I cut into chunks my own beetroot.
Oh, wonderful.
And I put it in apple cider vinegar.
Wow. You pickle it.
I have a half a dozen pieces with apple cider vinegar and beetroot juice, of course, from the bottle every morning.
How about that?
Is it beneficial?
Oh, absolutely.
How it's beneficial to the body.
Okay. Well, it might surprise you if I were to say that in certain parts of Europe, beetroot is considered to be almost, and I hate to use this term, a miracle herb, in as much that there's a folk tradition. And I please don't want people to go around saying that Dennis Stewart is promoting beetroot as a cancer cure. But people with cancer in certain parts of Europe use beetroot and beetroot juice, claiming that it has remarkable benefits in addressing that condition and perhaps even improving their prognosis. Now, I can only go on what my literature, and it's vast, says about the traditional use of this food, and it is a food. I would be as keen as mustard to keep taking what you're taking, particularly if it's been processed with apple cider vinegar, because again, apple cider vinegar has a folk tradition that needs to be respected. I'm just rereading, Greg, you might be interested in this, I'm just rereading Dr. Jarvis's book entitled Folk Medicine. Jarvis was an American GP that went down to Vermont, this is just after the Second World War, to practice medicine. When he went down there, however, he found that he didn't need to practice very much medicine because most of the people down there were using their own medicine and doing a pretty good job. And the backbone of their medical system was the use of apple cider vinegar. And based on his readings, his knowledge, and his use of apple cider vinegar, he wrote the book entitled Folk Medicine, which if you look in second-hand bookshops, you're likely to find a copy. It's treasured. I've got two copies and I won't part with them. Dr. Jarvis's book, Folk Medicine, Extolling the Virtues of Apple Cider Vinegar. And my dear mum, who taught me a lot of things, she died just shy of 90 years of age and she never stopped using apple cider vinegar all of her life. She wouldn't take any of my herbs because you probably did better with apple cider vinegar.
There you go. We've all learned something there. Now, Dennis, we're almost out of time. We've got about 3.5 minutes left. So in that time, can you tell us what are the main or the worst conditions that echinacea is used for?
Look, one of the best areas where it works is on what we call the peripheries, particularly the legs and particularly in elderly people and in people that have, elderly people that have, say, a nasty leg ulcer that is not doing well with the medical treatment and where the wound won't heal or infection keeps asserting itself. Diabetic people particularly fall into this category. There, a treatment that incorporates the use of echinacea, and it won't clash with what's being given to them medically, but a treatment that incorporates the regular, daily, correctly dosed preparation of echinacea, taken orally, supported by the use of honey ointment. That's a combination that I preach and preach and will do so because I've seen that combination work so well. It's still not appreciated enough. Elderly people, particularly diabetics, varicose ulcers, wounds on the extremities that aren't healing, echinacea orally, plenty of vitamin C, and the use of honey ointment. That is a remarkable combination, the benefit of which I've written on and have been constantly pleasantly pleased to see what echinacea does to lift the infection fight, and usually very successfully.
I've heard, is echinacea good for acne?
Look, to a degree. I would see it being more effective in more gross staph infections such as boils, carbuncles. I remember, and abscesses, lesions that have become defiant to antibiotics, which they can. I treated a school teacher from Stockton who for years was plagued with recurrent boils and carbuncles. It had so many antibiotics that he didn't want to know them anymore. He went on to an echinacea-based treatment, admittedly reinforced with the herb Golden Seal. He wouldn't go off it. It was so successful that it broke the spiral of recurrent boils, carbuncles and abscesses. In acne, maybe, but it needs to be supported there by hormone medication, Vitex Agnus Castus with echinacea. Not a bad combination.
What about tea tree oil?
Oh, tea tree oil is very good topically and particularly as a soap to use, sometimes applied to a lesion that's developing. It can abort it. But there again, one needs to be a little bit cautious. Acne is a condition which, in my opinion, needs to be monitored well by the GP. Complementary medicine has a role to play, but acne can get out of control.
Oh, yeah.
And there, the mainstream medications work still very effectively, but they can be supported by complementary medicine based along the lines that we've spoken about today.
Right. Well, we've had some good discussions and we're out of time.
Your leadership and your fisherman's friend.
Thank you.
Won the day.
Save the day. Okay. Thanks, Dennis. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.